It put out such a spread last night and made an incredible cocktail. The Aperol cocktail that she made, which was delicious, so refreshing for the beginning of an evening, totally whetting the appetite. So it was a fun evening. Thank you both for including us.
Such elegant language. I'm really very impressed. All right, let's get into the show. So, David von Storch, I think you're today Washington, tomorrow's the world, right? Because he's taken the town by storm, literally. He's the owner of Vita Fitness, of Cap City Brewing, and you're going to be hearing in a few minutes about his new place, Restaurant 901. And he's in with us, and he brought tastes.
Lots of tastes, and they smell delicious.
God
also,
bless him.
Later in the show, if you've got a princess at home, we've got
I got a princess and a monarch at home.
Yeah. We got some how-tos for you. We'll be talking to Barbara Beery. She's the author of the Pink Princess Cupcake book. Oh, no, Pink Princess Party Cookbook. It's going to be lots of fun. And we have the guys from Firefly Farms in. We are going to be talking about goat cheese. They brought in some delicious samples. We'll be tasting that later in the show.
And dear to my heart, for the first time in, I guess, 40 years, we've got a new distillery in the state of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
It's Blackwater Distilling, and brothers Chris and John Cook are in. They're gonna take us through tastings of Sloop Betty Vodka.
Sloop Betty.
So actually, let's start with you guys. What is Maryland's distilling history, and why hasn't there been a new distillery for 40 years? Are we an uptight state?
No, I think, we...
Don't be kind. Be...
Tell it like it is.
Is the ABC listening?
I think the industry was really hurt by Prohibition, so...
but that was a long time
ago. That ended in 1933.
Ago.
I was there.
Yeah, and a lot of the industry in Maryland actually had to do with rye whiskey. And in the 1970s, rye whiskey kind of fell out of favor.
And flavor.
Yeah. A lot of folks were focusing on the white spirits. So a lot of those mom and pops that did survive Prohibition actually went the way of the dodo in the 1970s. So.
What, you mean you're saying there are no more dodos?
No more dodos.
Is that what you're saying?
So what got you guys into it? I mean, what was the idea? Like, okay, we're going to start a distillery?
Well, we've been looking at, a couple,
you need to get closer to the
couple
mic.
Different businesses
Don't be
probably
shy.
Over a year or two before we settled on this idea. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we just approached it from a, why won't this work perspective. And we got to this one, and, it was something we were really passionate about, and we never found a reason why it wouldn't work.
Okay.
So here we are.
So did you have to do a lot of research on distilling? I mean, is this something that either of you had done previously?
We knew absolutely nothing about it, aside from enjoying a good cocktail, beer, wine, whatever. We attended a lot of conferences. We started networking with the American Distilling Institute.
Mm-hmm.
We attended classes at MSU. John and our other partner, Mark Troxler, went up to...
What's MSU?
MSU, Michigan State University.
Oh, the MSU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've been all over the country. We've been all over North America. John's attended classes in Montreal at the ethanol.
That's what he said. Mm-hmm. That's what he told you, anyway. Chris, I'll be back in 5 days. I'm going to Montreal.
I don't remember most of it either.
Well, there's lots of cocktails to taste up there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, why settle on vodka as your first production?
I don't think settling is the right word.
Okay, so I didn't mean it like that, but I mean, like, what made you decide on vodka first?
Oh, yeah, I think just from the perspective of the original dream was to do a rye whiskey and to bring that back to Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still the vision.
And I love rye whiskey.
Yeah, and that's still the vision. I think that that'll certainly be one of our products.
That was subtle.
I'm just saying. I love it.
When you all do develop your rye whiskey.
But from a, especially from a cash flow perspective, when you start looking at aging the product and actually getting into
getting
how
into
long it takes that rye whiskey to mature and be a good tasting rye whiskey, we felt like we had to start with something that didn't require that aging.
Okay.
So, well, you guys,
vodka in America is a $9 billion industry. Yeah, so
all right, so just tell us quickly about the vodka that you're pouring.
The vodka that we're pouring actually is a wheat vodka predominantly.
Mm-hmm.
We do put about 20% sugar cane distillate into the product as well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of wheat vodkas tend to have a little bit of a burn when you're tasting it. The sugar distillate mellows that burn out, neutralizes a lot of that.
Okay.
And it's a very smooth tasting vodka. We've actually won a gold medal with the 50 best .com. It'll be on our website.
You don't wear it all the time?
It'll be on our website, and you can print out a copy on Monday or Tuesday.
It's the only tender that matters anymore.
Yeah.
All right, well, while you guys are pouring, I'm going to turn to David von Storch. David, last time you were here, you were pouring brews, actually, from Capital City, and you were alluding to a secret project
you
that
were.
You had in the works. And obviously, the secret project was 901. Let's get into it. Tell us about it.
That's right. In June, we opened up a new restaurant concept called 901, and it is a sophisticated, sleek, stylish environment. It's a loungy, relaxed environment, but it's very urban for the city. It's really stylish. And the menu, as you can see, is predominantly a sharing menu. Mm-hmm. What we find is if you go to a tapas is traditionally the word for sharing, but tapas is Spanish, so we don't. It is in the concept of tapas, but what we did is two things. One was we tried to be a little broader. We tried to be very broad in terms of the offerings that we made. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is we wanted to portion it in a way that was a little bit more distinct so that people can share in without everybody putting their forks in the middle of a pile of nachos. Right. So as you can see, the food that we have here, the favorite thing for me on the menu is the tuna tartare, which is yellowfin tuna, avocado, ginger. Soy ginger.
I love tuna.
Did
avocado.
You just send me a message mentally to try this?
Yes,
I did.
And because you know, it is so
God.
Good.
It's so enormous.
It's ridiculously good.
Well, that's why you don't.
You don't need to.
All right,
that's
we have
the best
a camera
thing.
On this bad boy.
Right, as he gets all over himself.
I'll try and get the whole thing in there.
But now you do other concepts around the city. What made you come up with this one? Congratulations.
I don't think he's going to tell us how good it is for a minute, but I think it looks... I think
he just put the whole thing into his mouth.
Yeah.
I'm so proud. Okay.
Well, Urban Adventures is a lifestyle company that
Wait,
I've been
excuse me one
on.
Second. You know what? Why don't you keep doing that? And then you'll be quiet for the whole show. You won't say anything.
If I'd bitten it in half, it would have gone all over the place.
All right. So please, continue.
Urban Adventures is a lifestyle company that I started many years ago. And 901 is really the first... food and beverage part of that really is consistent with the demographic that we're going after.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Vita Fitness, Bang Salon, and Aura Spa, those are the three different business units that we have. They're targeting a very similar demographic.
Okay.
It's $80,000
so
a year.
Capital City is not part of that?
And Capital City really is a little bit different. It's a little bit more family-oriented, tourist-oriented, convention-oriented. And 901 is... is the first entry into the food and beverage market, entertainment market, that's really consistent with what we do, who we know well.
Gotcha.
Right.
So the idea is, what do the people that buy our pool memberships, that buy personal training, that have styles, you know, they go to our hairstylists, go to Bang Salon, what do they look for in food and entertainment? And that's what 901 is. And that's the market. So it's been really great, because if you think about it, someone who's going to pay for personal training, someone who's going to pay for a pool club membership, the people who pay for the styling service, they've got money to spend, and they care.
And they want to eat well.
And they want to be in an environment that sort of fits their psychographic profile.
Gross amounts of food.
That's right.
That's the other thing. So.
Some don't.
I'm clearly not your target demographic.
As you were working with Thomas Hall as your chef, correct?
That's right.
So did you have a menu in mind as you were putting the restaurant together, or did you work with him? How did the menu come together?
It was more of a collaborative process.
Okay.
One of the things that I liked about the process was, we talked about this last time, every week, every Tuesday for 30 weeks, mm-hmm. we would sit down and we would sample items, and we would literally be very unfiltered in terms of what we were presenting.
And the stuff that he was putting together and you were saying, hey, why don't you do this?
Actually, it was interesting. It was the other way around. We spent about almost a year putting the menu together, and then we found the right chef.
Uh-huh.
And so Tom took that menu and he said, okay, what you're trying to do.
He was a 10-pen, right?
Yeah, he was a 10-pen.
Yeah, and Tom is great. Tom is, he's young enough that he's creative, mm-hmm. but he doesn't have all that
ego.
I'm fabulousness about him that some of the more established chefs. Yeah.
Who would be like that?
I'm just saying.
I don't know anybody with a big ego. Go ahead.
So he came back and he said, this is the dish that you guys developed, and this is the dish as I present it.
Cool.
Every single time it was better by far. But it was great. So it started from an organic process, mm-hmm. of what do we think would fit in the concept. You know, so it's a concept-driven restaurant, and I know that you know that says certain things to certain people, but it's not a menu-driven restaurant.
Right.
If you walked into this restaurant, what would you want to have?
Well, the restaurant is gorgeous. I think we should talk about the design. I mean, you took a space; it's an enormous space.
Yeah.
How big is it?
7,500 square feet.
I mean, it's a good size restaurant space. Yeah. And you had to gut the whole thing, right? Because there was nothing in there for how long?
Oh, yeah, it was
three, an old restaurant.
It was three or four different restaurants, none of which made it.
Right.
And yeah, we gutted it completely. And what we created, which I'm really happy with, is that while it's a big restaurant, there are lots of smaller, intimate spaces within that larger space so that you can go with a, we have a chef's table, for example, where it's right next to the kitchen, but it's not in the kitchen.
Right.
And you sit down and you don't know what you're going to have. The chef comes out and asks you what are you in the mood for. So he takes your input and he literally does a three-course meal for you. And you don't, and it's a tremendous, it's a really, it's a really great dining experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, who was the designer of the space?
Well, I'd like to say I was.
Okay.
But
then you can. You can say that.
But that's only because I wrote the checks.
You didn't by any chance bring your checkbook.
Halleck Design out of Miami, Florida, and Stone King Von Storck, which is my brother. His firm did the mechanics, the architectural stuff. And Wade Halleck is I've worked with for a long time. He's just really creative.
It's a very sleek and sexy
And, you know,
space.
He's from South Florida. And you know what? There is a different kind of aesthetic that you find there than you find elsewhere. And he brings that. And you're right. When you walk in, it's just a little bit different.
Right. It is. It's very sleek. Okay. We have to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about some of your other projects. And we are going to be sipping some vodka. Right, gentlemen? This is David and Nikki Nellis.
Sipping?
Well, I'll be sipping. You can do whatever it is you do.
Okay. Not shooting?
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Torno, the world's largest watch store. Torno. The Fashion Center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job. But I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that. So I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
And we are back on Foodie and the Beast. I've been stuffing food from 901 in my face during the break.
Delicious. Everything's delicious.
David Von Storck in with us, the conceptualizer and the boss.
The boss. Yeah,
and both.
The big guy.
So you guys were talking about some stuff.
Well, so you're behind Vita Health Clubs.
Vita Fitness, right.
Vita Fitness. How many are there in the city?
There are four. We just opened our fourth at U Street. It was a 50,000 square foot or 40,000 square foot warehouse, and we literally tore it down to the footings and put an addition on it. And it opened last month,
right?
And the real crown of it, literally, is a pool club on the roof.
Mm-hmm. But that's not open yet.
No, that opens next month.
Okay, so tell us about the pool club.
Well, you know, when you live in the city, there's really no place to retreat or escape from the city.
Right.
Sometimes you can go to a hotel pool, but they kick you out if there's an event. Or, you know, there's just no place for us to go. So Vita Fitness is really, the Penthouse Pool Club is really designed to be that place where we can go.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will have cabanas for rental. It has a full service bar. And we have food. We have food
is it
service there.
It's enclosed or not enclosed?
No, it's open.
It's an outdoor pool.
Okay.
There's literally a pool club.
David's like, give me a membership.
Yeah, it's really great. And the pool, as a matter of fact, we've almost sold out
of
memberships.
I got my Speedo on and I'm ready to go.
So... what kind of food service will you do up there?
Well, you know, the good news is that We have a lot of the inspirations for what we're going to do from the sharing menu at 901.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be able to get stuff like this.
Great.
By the pool, which is, it's light, it's healthy, mm-hmm. but it's really flavorful. But of course, we're going to have hamburgers and the thing, chickens and salads, the stuff
right.
that you really want at the pool. Because some people are going to, some people go there to relax and some people go there to sort of reward themselves for the workout they just did.
The downstairs. Yeah. Right, I
Guys,
love it.
We're almost done. I would want to give David a chance to do the obvious stuff. Can you tell everybody where to find 901
Please.
And everything else of yours online? And first of all, is 901 available on OpenTable?
Yep, it's available
okay.
on OpenTable, which
awesome.
Is a really great way to get to a table.
Mm-hmm.
901DC.com is the name of the website.
Great.
It's a beautiful website, really sexy.
Mm-hmm.
And VitaFitness.com. And banksalon.com and Orispod. So it's just the name and .com generally.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming
in this
morning.
Thank you for having me. It's good to see you.
I do believe you're
too.
Taking over.
I know. And thanks for bringing in all this delicious food. It's really
beautiful stuff.
My pleasure.
All right. Blackwater, guys.
So this vodka was smooth.
It is. It really...
Yeah,
I didn't do a shot. I'm not like that. I'm not going to do that. But it's...
Why is she sipping dainty
did.
Little sips?
I know.
We did. There's none of that gasoline after... There's not even an aftertaste. It just goes down. It's
mm-hmm.
It's yummy.
But we use all organic ingredients in there. And we went into that skeptically when we were doing recipe development and prototypes.
Why?
You look at a product like a spirit, and at least for me early on, I thought, you know, any grain, any other substrate that we use, it's got to go through fermentation before it, you know, gets run through a still.
Mm-hmm.
How much are we really going to be able to taste from the organic grain as opposed to any other grain? And at the end of the day, it was remarkable what the difference was in terms of flavor profile.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is. I mean,
right.
even after it's processed like that, there's still a huge taste difference.
Now, let me ask you two questions at once. Number one, who is or what is Sloop Betty, and what are you pouring next?
Sloop Betty actually is based on an historical ship that sailed the Chesapeake Bay back in the early 1700s. Blackbeard at one point plundered it, and we wanted to draw that connection, that historic connection to the area with the name of the product. And Sloop Betty, the image, was inspired in part by our grandfather.
She looks like Jessica Rabbit. You guys, you got to go Google it because you got to see Sloop
She's
Betty.
She's very sexy.
She's
yeah,
hot
she,
stuff. I'm leaving you, by the way.
Okay.
During World War II, there was a lot of fuselage art on aircraft, and she's inspired by that 1940s pinup, that classic look, and she represents, that historical connection to
you
our family.
You've been a 1940s pinup, baby.
I would have had to have been born in the 1940s.
Like some other people, right?
Right.
I knew that was coming. Gee, I just gave you a compliment.
Thank
All right.
you. So what are you guys going to pour for us next?
We're going to pour the Baltimore Blossom, which is muddled raspberries, basil leaves with some cranberry, and Sloop Betty.
Yum, that sounds delicious.
Nice.
All right,
while
you guys get to making.
While you do that, Barbara, are you on the phone?
Yes.
Hi. We have Barbara Beery on the phone. Barbara, we have a princess.
We do.
We have five kids.
You do.
And our youngest is an 8-year-old. It was a very difficult birth because we had a lot of trouble getting her tiara out.
it wasn't difficult for him.
At least
it was difficult for me.
At least somebody laughed. But how did your fascination with princesses start and why write the book?
Well, probably much of the same reason yours did. The first child I had was a little girl 28 years ago. And on her fourth birthday, as mothers do, conjuring up all these ideas of wonderful, elaborate birthday parties you can do,
mm-hmm.
she always wore a little pink princess satin dress that my mother had made for her. And I thought, we need to have a pink princess party this year. So about 24 years ago, I conjured up this notion. And let me just say that I think it's one of those things that's kind of an eternal little Disney sort of girly fantasy world. And to wrap it up into something that they can cook and have fun with just was a natural match for me because I'm a teacher. And I got my degree in teaching. I grew up cooking with my mom. And so the combination when I started teaching kids cooking classes about 25 years ago just simply worked.
So now you have a school, right, that is just,
yes.
just for teaching kids cooking?
We have a kids cooking school and a retail center, not unlike Williams-Sonoma or Sur La Table, only it's just for kids, and it's called Kids Cook.
Mm-hmm.
So we do the classes, camps, birthday parties, but we have a really cool area called the Kids Cook Cafe, where, as in any cafe, you eat. The difference is the kids come in and cook the treats they want to eat, and that's a really fun drop-in activity kids can do anytime we're open.
So as you were doing, as with these pink Princess Party Cookbooks. I have to tell you, I own some of your books prior to this book coming out because my daughter loves to cook with me. And I liked, listen, if I could have dipped her in glitter when she was a baby, I would have. I mean, I love that kind of stuff. And
now that's what she'll do with the next Manny Petty.
Right. But how did you come up with these party ideas? Because they're fun and they're different. And I think moms with little girls are looking for fun party ideas to do with their daughters that they can participate in.
Of course they are, and I think the participation is the key to this because kids want to be involved.
Right.
It's usually us silly grown-ups that keep them from doing that because we have this expectation of having everything perfect. But you know what? The kids want to get in there and do hands-on no matter what it is.
Right.
So I think involving the kids in very simple recipes with ingredients that are most likely going to be found in your pantry and refrigerator, and if not, maybe you'll have to go out and buy one or two things. I think simplicity is the key to it and involving the kids. And the ideas have come through the years of teaching kids cooking classes. You know, the kids sometimes give me the best ideas.
Really?
Well, absolutely.
Well, and in this sort of era of kids, you know, with, you know, we're in Washington, so there's a lot of Michelle Obama talking about eating healthy. Are you getting a lot of that, too, in your classes? And do you find that parents and children are asking for recipes that are tasty and healthy?
Absolutely. And the truth of the matter is we've always tried to do that. I'm a big proponent of balance. So I think a cupcake is just as important as fruits and vegetables. It's all about moderation, how often you eat it and how much you eat it. So we have nothing that's forbidden. We do everything from cupcake and cake decorating classes to last week for the three-year-olds and older, we all did learning to make bento sushi lunchbox treats.
Oh, fun.
Everybody's getting ready to go back to school.
Well, Barbara, wait, I got to interrupt for 1 second. We have Princess Tessa Nellis here. She's 8 years old. And she has a comment for you about your cookbook. What do you want to say?
Love it. It's really cool.
There you go. An unsolicited testimonial from Princess Tessa Nellis.
Enough said. That's the most perfect thing I could hear.
There you go. We'll send you a bill later. Don't worry.
Well, actually, I want to piggyback on what you were saying earlier about school lunches. You know, I make lunch for the kids every day. I prefer that they not buy at school because I think the school lunches are terrible. What are some great suggestions for getting creative with lunches? Because, you know, after a while, you get bored of making the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, and if you're like, I had three kids that all like something different, and I mm-hmm. packed three different lunches for all of them. Yes, I do know
you're
that
a good
story.
Mom.
I think the key is simplicity, and there's so many things we already have that we could do.
Mm-hmm.
We sell lots of little, small, 2-inch cookie cutters that people can cut out slices of cheese and slices of their favorite lunch meat to put together fun little shapes of bites to eat. And I think another thing is making smaller portions of many different things so kids have options. The thing we did in the class last week was we dyed rice, just plain rice. You put it in water prior to cooking it, and we dyed it with blueberries. Well, it gives you maybe a little bit of nutrients, but a pretty purple color. And somehow I found through the years that kids and color are a wonderful combination because if you've got something that's a crazy color and it tastes good, they're going to try it.
So the blueberries, wait, back up.
Yeah,
the blueberries dyed the rice blue?
Yeah, absolutely. You could do the same thing
with
chopped beets if you want to use natural dyes. And if you're like me and I can use natural or unnatural dyes, any mm-hmm. good food coloring will do the same kind of thing. And then we piled it in a little round circle, and we cut a turkey hot dog to look like an octopus, and we let the kids paint the eyes on it with edible markers and set it up on top of the rice, and it was adorable, and they gobbled it up.
Oh, I bet. That sounds like so much
fun. Sounds disgusting. Kids will eat anything. So, Barb, I got a question for you, because in the book, it's not your I actually read it, which I don't often do.
I'm
because
impressed.
Right, me too.
It ain't exactly my thing, but you have recipes in there for face paints and body lotions. Is that cooking?
No.
Is that cooking?
Well, as I like to say, it's cooking stretched to the limits. Mm-hmm. Anything that's creative that you can mix up in the kitchen is cooking in my book. So crafts are a big thing to kids because, again, it's about the creativity and the imagination. And we do all kinds of things when we do our cooking birthday parties. You know, they have options. We have something we call the main event and then the sideshow. And a sideshow is a craft that they can add on to a cooking party.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I consider that cooking. We even do soap and candle making, but you're still cooking stuff up in the kitchen. Maybe it's not edible.
Well, I think that sounds cool, and I agree with you. I think little projects are always great for kids, whether they're edible or not. Now, I know you do girls' mm-hmm. parties, but boys are getting in the kitchen, too. Do you have any excellent recommendations for boys?
We do a lot of boys. We do do a lot of boys' parties, and I'm going to be straightforward with you. I have pitched boys' cookbooks to my publisher many times, and they say the girls' cookbooks sell. Keep writing them. So I've tried, yes, construction cooking, anything with Lego, construction.
That's cool.
Superstars, pirates, knights. We do all that kind of thing and have a lot of fun doing it. And the boys, truthfully, when we get boys in the cooking classes, 90% of the time they're much more serious and into it than a lot of the girls are.
Well, there's so many male chefs. You would imagine that some of these young boys are into it early on. I mean, it doesn't just come to them one day at 21.
It doesn't?
No. Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can figure out, and I've said this all along, I love Texas. Austin is my home. I've lived here forever. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I can figure out here is maybe we just have a bunch of rednecks that say, my boy's not going to get in the kitchen.
I got a question for you. Has Rick Perry ever come to one of your princess parties?
He hasn't yet, but I should invite him now, shouldn't I?
Yeah, really, you should. I'll see if he shows up. He's a real man.
Mm-hmm. I'd like the tiara on that hair of his.
They call him Governor Hare.
We can't go there.
Right, no.
We're going to take a break real quick, but Tessa wants to say goodbye.
Say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Okay,
there
you go. Thank you. All right, Barbara, we have to take a quick break. Can you just hold on for a sec? We'll be right back with you.
Of course.
Excellent. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are talking Pink Princess, and I see some beautiful pink cocktails. How appropriate, gentlemen, over at the end of the studio.
So Princess won't get any.
No. We'll be back in just a sec.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
The Bethesda Central Farm Market, you guys, is awesome. They close off Elm Street in Bethesda every Sunday from 9 to 1. They've got 40-plus vendors with everything from local organic produce and meats and poultry and breads and coffee and chocolate and olive oils and cheeses and more. It's really unbelievable, and it's free parking, which I really love because, you know, I'm cheap. So go and check it out because we go there every week. We get fresh fruit and veggies and berries from Twin Springs Farms, a lot of great organic produce from Bending Bridge Farm. The guys at Walnut Hill have free-range eggs. There's cheese from Cowgirl Creamery. We always stop into Poupon Authentic French Bakery and also Upper Crust Real Hearth-Baked European Breads. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it's an amazing assortment of vendors. So go to Bethesda Central Farm Market every Sunday from 9 to 1 in Bethesda on Elm Street. They close the street off, so it's easy walking around. And if you want to know more, go to BethesdaCentralFarmMarket.com. If Foodie and the Beast tell you to go, it's good.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Can you find anything on the internet? Well, I'm sure you can, but don't take my word for it. Just ask this talking dog who can only say, I love you. Roll the clip. One more time, talking dog.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hey, you're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We've got Barbara Beery on the phone. Barbara, you still there?
I'm still here.
Well, we have a studio full of food.
We've got gorgeous goat cheese that was just placed in front of us.
I wish you could be here with us. So,
I
you know,
wish
we,
I was too.
Well, we'd love to have you. Anytime you're in Washington, you let us know. So,
what's next for the Princess Cookbook? What's your next theme?
I think, and I just met with my publisher last week in New York and pitched this to them, and I'm writing the table of contents this morning. I think we're going to do a Peace and Love Princess.
Ooh, I love that.
I think that if you have a daughter, you said
peace
today?
And love.
Mm-hmm. Every little girl, really, basically, that comes in that's over the age of 5, when they're given, you know, they draw on their aprons, they do all this decorating as part of our cooking activities, we see so many peace and love signs. I've been seeing it for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
In our store, we sell a peace sign cake pan. We've got peace sign peelers. We've got peace sign cupcake kits. It's a really, really big phenomenon. But beyond that, I don't think there's anything better that we can get out there than peace and love. And
you know,
I think if we wrap that whole thing up, it'd be a fun book.
As an aging hippie, the only one in the studio who was there when it all really happened.
I was there too.
Yeah.
Well, look, I wasn't. Look, I just want to make that perfectly
look,
clear.
When I make that V sign, everybody thinks I'm pretending I'm Winston Churchill. That's not right.
Well, listen, we really appreciate...
Wait a minute. This new book, can we find it on Amazon? Where does everybody who's listening find it?
Pink Princess Party Cookbook you can find on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and I can't undercut their price, but I can do this. If people go to kidscookingshop.com, which is our website, I can offer them a signed cookbook, and I'd be delighted to do
that. Awesome.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and when that next Peace Love One comes out, we'll absolutely have you on again.
Let's say goodbye to the queen of Princess cookbooks. Barbara, thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Nice talking with you. Bye-bye.
You too. All right, well, let's go back to the princes of vodka, Maryland Vodka, the guys from Blackwater Distillery. Chris and John... Take us a little through the process. How is vodka made? How do you do it?
Yeah,
how can I do it at home?
I think, you know, where we focus most of our efforts actually is through a proprietary filtration unit that we have at the office or at the shop. We spent a lot of time actually experimenting with different carbons. We even experimented at one point with green coconut husks in the effort to make it as sustainable as possible.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, really what we're focused on most is the taste. And craft distilling really emphasizes, you know, being able to taste the grains, the root ingredients that you're using in that, whether you're making a rum, a rye whiskey, or a vodka. So you're really focusing on taking out the taste elements that are less desirable and maintaining the ones that are very desirable. And so, again, that cocktail that you're about to sip right there has got muddled raspberries.
How did you know?
It's got muddled
basil.
It's very
clean smelling, though.
Leaves.
I mean, if you look at it, it looks like it's going to be sweet, and it's not at
nice,
all.
No, it's nice and so almost tart.
A dash of grapefruit bitters, also cranberry. So, but it's one, you know, we look at when we're doing cocktails, and we've got our mixologist and distiller on staff is John Boyer, and he focuses on, he brings a lot of these cocktails for us. He's focusing on ones that you can actually taste the ingredients, taste the vodka, and not be overwhelmed by a lot of, you know, the sweetness. A lot of people think vodka, they think cocktails and mixers. We wanted this to stand alone as something that was good by itself, as we just tasted before this cocktail, and good with other natural, especially organic ingredients.
Well, right, you wouldn't want to mask it. I mean, if you took all that time to make and all your research to make a quality product, why would you want to mask it with juice? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
A rhetorical question from the foodie.
No, it's rhetorical. It's serious. But, okay. What? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, what, you know, I'm not a big vodka fan in general because of that kind of that gasoline-y aftertaste that you sometimes get. Mm-hmm. And this is very clean.
Thank you.
There's none of that.
We hear people.
How do you do that?
You know, a lot of it's, as Chris said, it's filtration. You know, and it's tricky to find the right mix for filtration, where you're leaving the flavors that you want in and you're getting rid of the ones that you don't. It, you know, it starts with good ingredients. You know, so using the organic wheat and cane is a big part of it. You know, you just get it.
But most people don't use sugarcane, correct?
Correct.
I mean, how did you come up with that idea?
I mean, it's just like coming up with a recipe for anything else, right? You've got an undesirable characteristic, which with pure wheat is just that little bit of burn. And then you experiment until you find something that gets rid of it. And so there are distillates that come out a little bit sweeter.
In your research, did somebody else use sugarcane? I mean, it seems like an interesting thing to come up with.
Yeah, we've got our distiller and mixologist, and the two of us sat down. We looked at rye. We were looking at doing a rye whiskey. We made a rye vodka.
We even thought about barley at one point.
We talked about corn. We did just lots and lots and lots of prototypes and combinations of prototypes. I mean, in the sugarcane distiller with the wheat, we actually used different combinations of the sugarcane with the wheat.
And it's not even just the substrates, because then you have to run each through every different type of filter of carbon that you're looking at.
You know,
too.
Okay.
All of a sudden you lost me. I was like, wait.
In the annals of history, when they talk about the brothers of invention, they'll have Orville and Wilbur, and then they'll have you guys.
Thank you very much.
That's teaching good. People to fly another way. All right. So,
what are you going to pour next?
What are you pouring next?
Are you making another drink?
We've got another cocktail called the Daily Pinup, and it's an iced tea and vodka based. So.
Cool.
Perfect.
All right. We're ready. Well, while you're doing that, we're going to turn to our friends, Mike Koch, and Pablo Solanet from Firefly Farms. We met these guys at a dinner at their house.
Yes.
That they kindly donated for. It was a charitable thing, right?
It was. Yeah. It was for Fresh Farm Markets.
You need to get closer to the mic.
We participate in a number of the Fresh Farm Markets, farmers markets in the city, and it was something that we donated, and it was a pleasure to have you guys there.
It was such a fun evening.
Who was that? Amanda and Peter and David Hagedorn.
And, oh, of course. He asked you if you knew David. Of course you did.
Of course you do. And Michael Wadomski and all that. Anyways.
Okay, but let's talk about your farm. How did the two of you get involved in cheese
making? No, wait. We have to say, these guys live over right near in Chevy Chase, D.C. Mm-hmm. How did you become goat farmers? That's the...
Well, let's start with that.
Yeah, it's kind of a long story. I'll shorten it.
Okay.
We bought a home out in Garrett County, Maryland, and you know, want to shout out to all of our friends out by Deep Creek Lake and in Mountain,
all
Maryland.
My friends at Deep Creek Lake.
It's a great part of the state, and we bought the farm and a whole bunch of land as a vacation home. And I suppose it says something about our personalities that we turned it into a business.
Right. People who don't sit still.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's become sort of a passion and an exit strategy from rapidly accelerating urban life. So we started experimenting with cheese in our kitchen, and before you knew it, we were
why goats? How did you end up with goats?
Was it something you wanted to do?
Well, we love goat cheese, both of us. Mm-hmm. I'm a chef, and we wanted to experiment. I always wanted to learn how to make cheese.
Okay.
And there was some history. Both of us come from agricultural families, and my great-grandfather was a cheesemaker in Switzerland.
Really?
Pablo's culinary props and all of that went well with some chemistry course that I took in college. So I was sort of really into the microbiological level of what was going on in the cheese, and it worked well. It was a great collaboration.
So how did you wind up with goats?
They're a little bit easier to handle
than cows.
Yes.
Than cows.
Okay.
And at the time, there was no cheese being made in Maryland, and certainly no goat cheese.
Really?
And so out in the western part of the state, there certainly is a lot of dairy farming and much more goat dairy farming than you'd imagine.
Here's my question. Do they hold still to be milked? How do you get them to...
They got to
run and tackle them and then milk them. No, but I mean, you know, animals would not put up with it.
Right. Now, goats are, they're sort of, I think of them as a cross between, you know, a cow and a dog. They're much more interested in human beings. And,
absolutely.
They're a little bit easier to manage, I think, than cows.
Dogs. Oh. Can you milk a German Shepherd, for example?
Gosh,
you guys don't own your own goats anymore, correct?
Correct.
Started with that, but now you're doing something totally different. So explain the process. Where are we now?
We are buying milk from four Amish farms across the border in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. There's a big community there. We get fresh milk every other day and turn it into cheese. That was a decision that we made in 2006. If you want to be a cheesemaker, there's a point that you have to make a decision. If you want to continue milking the goats and take care of the animals, or you want to focus in the cheese production.
It's hard to do both.
It's hard.
Absolutely.
It was hard for us. And props to those who are farmstead cheesemakers and doing both.
Right.
As Pablo talked about, we reached a point where we wanted to grow. Mm-hmm. We had a market demand for the product. And so we sold the herd that we had raised to one of the farmers that still milks it for us now.
Okay.
And we're able to have a bigger impact on regional agriculture in this way. We're actually looking for more.
Well, you're sort of spreading the wealth.
Exactly.
I like that.
I'm looking for more farmers to be Firefly producers as we speak.
How many people work at Firefly? I mean, you're here, so who's making the cheese today?
Props to Andy and Matt Cedro, who are back out in Garrett County. We recruited Matt, who is our cheesemaker now. Pablo was the first Firefly cheesemaker. Sent Matt up to the Vermont Institute of Artisanal Cheese, and he's doing
education.
A terrific job.
Excellent.
Between full-time employees, part-time employees, and the farmers that we pay as contract workers, we're 17 total now.
Now, the farms that you work with, do you have specifications like on what you want the goats to eat? How do you work with the farmers, and is it all pastured raised? I mean, are these like healthy, happy goats?
You know, we are moving.
Yes.
We're moving in that direction, Nikki. But it's one of the places where I want to spend a lot of Firefly's focus over the next couple of years.
Okay.
As Paolo mentioned, three of our four farmers are Amish producers, and they're very sustainable and natural in their orientation, but none of them are certified organic. We do an annual producer survey.
Is that because they just don't want to?
They haven't taken the time.
They haven't taken the, you know.
Yes.
That's a lot happening a lot at farmers markets. I mean, some of these farmers just don't have the money to get the certification, but they are practicing organically
yes.
at their farm.
That's right.
That's right.
You know, so is that stamp that important to your product, do you think?
In the future, I think it may be. Right
okay.
now, I don't feel like it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we aspire to, and
mm-hmm.
we'll, in our new creamery, get our organic certification so that when we have a farmer who is then certified organic, we can begin to do an organic product essentially immediately.
Okay. Now let's talk about your cheeses.
Yeah.
They're so gorgeous. So we have three here today. Tell us what we have right here.
Well, the one closer to you is mm-hmm. the Cabra La Mancha.
Okay. And tell me how this cheese is made.
That one is a wash rind goat cheese. It has the beer linens mold in the surface.
Mm-hmm.
It's aged between 3-4 months.
Okay.
And the smell of it is just...
Oh, no, I already ate it. It's delicious.
Very, thank you. It's very popular in farmers markets.
How'd you get some?
I took a piece.
It's also a great melting cheese.
Oh, is it really?
Absolutely.
Because I think people think of goat cheese. Because I think for most people here, goat cheese is
the crumbly...
You know, or
yes.
the chèvre.
We're
yes,
about
right.
to take a break. Let me ask a quick question. I love eating the rind. On
yeah.
certain cheeses. You don't eat them all the time. And people will...
Ask the question.
More often than not, cut it off. Do you advise eating the rind or not eating the rind?
I do. I do. There's a lot of flavor in the rind. And most of the moldy, rinds in the cheese is what gives the flavor to
right.
the cheese.
All right.
So.
We have to take a quick
yummy.
Break. But when we come back, I want to talk about some of the flavors that we're looking for in these cheeses and talk about the beautiful food you made today. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. I see some iced tea in my future and some more goat cheese. We'll be back in just a sec.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit matrixdirect.com.
Sometimes I worry about what would happen to my family if I lost my job, but I never really thought about what would happen to them if they lost me and I didn't have life insurance. My cousin's husband died, and now she might have to sell her house just to make ends meet. I don't ever want to put my wife through that, so I called Matrix Direct.
Hi, I'm Brent Langdon for Matrix Direct. We partnered with American General Life to find you their lowest rates on term life insurance products. If you're 40 years old and married, we could find you a $250,000 policy for less than $16 a month. Call now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-588-5514.
I feel so much better now that I called.
It only takes 5 minutes to see how you could save up to 70%. Call now. 1-800-588-5514. 1-800-588-5514.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic Oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Torno, the world's largest watch store. Torno, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Our guests in studio are Michael Koch and Pablo Solanet, who are the owners of Firefly Farms.
And, in Maryland.
And Hale and Hardy fellows well met.
We got a lot of Maryland.
I know.
Going on
before
in
we
studio.
Get back to the guys, I just want to thank the folks that sponsor this show because otherwise we wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
Guys at Neighborhood Restaurant Group, particularly Planet Wine, which is an awesome wine store out mm-hmm. in Del Rey. And the folks at Founding Farmers and Farmers and Fishers.
Mm-hmm.
The guys at Dish, Notte Bianchi and Circle Bistro. Charles Schwartz and Son Fine Jewelers, and those wild and crazy people at Bethesda Central Farm Market. Thanks for supporting the show.
All right,
so back
guys,
to you
guys. Let's get back to you. I mean, we've been munching on cheese while we're out there.
Can you hear me swallowing?
So let's just talk. So we have the chèvre. That's fresh.
Absolutely, yeah.
So when was it made?
That roughly. One probably about a week ago.
Okay. And how long does a fresh goat cheese last?
It will last about 4 weeks.
4 weeks?
Yeah. Yes.
And what are we looking for? Like, when you open up the goat cheese, what do you look for? Like, what's the flavor? What's the scent? What should I look for as a goat cheese eater?
Well, so fresh chev is we think of it as like a staple. And
it could replace butter.
It could replace butter. It could replace ricotta.
It could replace my arteries, too.
Allegheny chev, the firefly chev, is... I think it's notable because it's got a little bit of a citrusy note. There's mm-hmm. a tanginess. And so we're serving it here in the studio on an arugula salad with some freshly cooked mm-hmm. beets from the farmer's market.
You know, it's mm-hmm. got the consistency almost of ricotta, and it's really good.
Yeah, mm. yeah.
Thank you.
And shout out to our friends at Sweetgreen. This is the chev that Sweetgreen uses in its salads.
Nick Jamay.
We love Nick.
Yay.
Good
we
guy.
Love Nick, too.
Good
really
guy.
Good guy.
Okay, so let's talk about this cheese.
So in the middle is Mountaintop Blue, and mm-hmm. it's our single most awarded cheese.
Really?
And we've gone full circle recently. It won first place ribbon at the American Cheese Society judging our first year out as a company. Mm-hmm. And then this past year it won again. It's a surface-ripened pyramid, and it's got a balance of blue and white mold on its surface. And as you can see from this one sitting here in front of me, it's getting... nice and
gooey.
Yes.
You can just dip a fork in it.
We don't hear.
So, but it is a blue cheese, right? But it doesn't have the classic veins that you would see in other blue cheeses.
Right.
It's a soft, ripened blue. Mm-hmm. So it's got a little bit of delicate veining on the inside because we do puncture it.
Okay.
But it's non-traditional in the sense that traditional blues are harder.
Right.
And we actually do a cheese called Black and Blue, which is a much more traditional blue.
Okay.
It's a much stronger blue
cheese. Yeah, they're usually crumbly. I've never seen one that's...
Yeah, yeah, it's almost mm-hmm. brie-like.
It is.
Or triple mm-hmm. cream.
Yeah, exactly.
So what made you decide to do this? I mean, how did you pick the kind... I mean, clearly the chef makes sense. You're doing goat cheese. But,
right.
I mean, goat's milk. How did you come up with the kinds of cheeses that you wanted to present?
Well, we thought about it, you know... hard and long, what kind of cheeses we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a fresh, so you know, you can use it so many ways. Also, we wanted to do a brie, mm-hmm. A blue, definitely.
But brie, is brie normally with goat cheese?
No.
I mean, goat milk? I'm sorry, I keep saying that.
And Pablo's sort of hinting at the essence, right? We wanted to be sort of quirky.
Mm-hmm.
Our cheeses are all sort of something reminiscent from... the heritage of cheese making, and then something sort of twisty and quirky. So our Merry Goat Round is our homage to brie, but it's goat's milk, and it's completely different altogether than
right, because it doesn't have that taste of brie.
That's
like
right.
that bite
right.
at the end of brie, but it's totally different with
right.
yours. I've
and
had it.
Merry Goat is more mushroomy mm-hmm. and earthy, and so each of these cheeses, we sort of took something from tradition and then twisted it and tried to have a sense of humor and whimsy about
it. We had
cheese.
It at your house, didn't we?
You
yes.
did.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you a question. So when you are tasting other people's cheese, do you ever taste a cheese and think, I want to do this, or I can do this one better, or let's do this but add that? How do you come up, where do the ideas come from?
Or this sucks, oh. I can't believe they get paid for this.
Absolutely. I mean, we...
A little bit of both.
Okay.
We eat all kinds of cheeses, and we always try to... get inspired from another, you know, cheesemakers and mm-hmm. see what they're doing.
Right.
You know, and...
All right. Well, let's talk about your farm because you guys just built a dairy. What did you build?
So we just opened a new creamery.
Creamery.
And it's...
Can you buy goat milk?
You can.
You can.
No, not
in the creamery.
You can, but not at our creamery.
Okay.
Right? Yeah,
I mean, I know I can. Yeah. I meant can buy it there.
Sorry. not at Firefly Creamery. Mm-hmm. Maybe one day. And it's right in Accident, Maryland, which is
where?
Accident, Maryland.
I had one of them.
Yeah,
I had me one of them.
So we're there processing cheese now.
Mm-hmm.
It was designed after almost 10 years of making cheese to be everything we wanted the plant to be,
right.
including a pickup facility for our whey, which our friend... at Wagon Wheel Farm comes and picks up and feeds to his livestock.
Cool.
So we're
so really sustainable.
Yes.
You're doing the whole thing. I love that.
All right, I got to jump in. Guys, we've got to go back to our friends here.
I know,
it's
but
almost
can
time
you just tell people
yes,
that you're opening up
sure.
the store and where the farm is just quickly?
So where you are on the web.
Yeah, the creamery is open. We're opening a store there in October, grand opening on October the 7th. fireflyfarms.com, mm-hmm. at Firefly Cheese on Twitter, and Firefly Farms on Facebook.
And you know what? We're going to be there by accident. Thank you very much.
We definitely want to come out and see the farm.
We would love
to come see that. And for people who haven't noticed, please check out your cheese departments at Whole Foods, because they are absolutely available there, and at farmers markets.
And
Fresh Farm Markets.
Balducci's.
Balducci's, you're everywhere.
Since it's in October, can you train some goats to go, David, like that, and I arrive? It would be very nice.
We'll start working on that.
Well,
thank you. God bless you, my son.
Okay.
All right, let's get back to Blackwater. Guys, one of the things that we notice in your materials is that a portion of your proceeds are going to the Blackwater National Wildlife Refuge. Why? Good question.
Well, I mean, it's a big part. It's a fixture on the Eastern Shore.
Did you grow up there and play there, and that's why you love it? Or
well, Chris and I have lived in Maryland since, I think, 1981. And growing up, we did spend a good deal of time on the Eastern Shore. I actually went to college at Washington College, which is over there.
Mm-hmm.
We camped over there as kids. So I spent a lot of time over there with the Boy Scouts. I think Chris did, too.
Mm-hmm. So, drinking vodka in the woods.
It's just simply one of the most beautiful places on Earth, I think, mm-hmm. To go out there. And, you know, it's something minimal that we can do in terms of giving back. So,
well, I think it's a generous thing to do. Let's talk about this drink. Mm-hmm. Is it just iced tea and your vodka? I mean, what's in here?
I wish it was that simple.
Okay.
Well, it is iced tea and our vodka. I think it's best if you brew the iced tea yourself, but we had mm-hmm. to take a little shortcut for you this morning. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I'm not holding it against you.
Okay. And then it's lemon juice, simple syrup, honey, and that's it. So
it's, but it's Tupelo honey, right?
Tupelo honey.
Mm-hmm. It's delicious.
Something my wife picked up probably about 3 months ago, and it's really, really sweet. Mm-hmm. It plays well with the iced tea.
Do we know who was born in Tupelo?
Elvis. That's right.
Thank you very much.
I was like, I had no idea.
Answering that question. All right, so
where can people find you?
On the web.
Yeah, we're at www.sloopbetty.com. We're also on Facebook, and we're on Twitter. Mm-hmm. If you go onto the sloopbetty.com site, there's a location link so you can see all the stores that we're in right now.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And can they come to the distillery?
Not yet.
No tours?
Not yet. Probably looking at 2012.
Okay. All right. And are you going to be making other spirits?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We're looking at probably doing a gin, rum, and a whiskey next. Not sure what order we're going to do them in yet.
All right. Well, you'll keep us posted.
That's
right.
Because you'll have to come back and pour them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Thanks
all right. Well,
thank you.
If you're out there listening and you think we jammed a lot of content into this show, there's so much more to know and do. And the way to find out about it is to go to the list, areyouonit.com.
Mm-hmm.
Shameless plug for Nikki's website.
Thank you.
You can join 36,000 other area residents who go there to find out what's going on all in one place. So it's the list, areyouonit.com. You can follow her on Twitter. What is your...
At Nick Nell.
At Nick, NYCNELL.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're around, tune to WTOP.
Yes.
At 10 of 1, and Nikki will be telling you about what's cool happening.
Well, actually, Restaurant Week is ending today, but so many restaurants do Restaurant Week extensions, so that's what I'll be talking about later on WTOP.
Okay, and you can watch us on NBC4's cable channel, Washington Nonstop. We film the show, so you can see everything that... All the ooing and eyeing.
You can see all the cheese.
What caused all the ooing and eyeing?
You can see what Sloop Betty looks like. Lots to say.
Oh, they're handsome.
I was talking about the chick.
Oh, sorry. All right.
Anyway, okay, so as we do on every show, we like to point out a specific charity, and we thought since...
Well, since we're trying to get free vodka, we're going to draw your attention to the Blackwater Wildlife Refuge. If you go to friendsofblackwater.org, there are ways to help preserve what are shrinking... natural treasures here in the U.S., and one of them's close at hand, right down on the Eastern Shore. So it's friendsofblackwater.org, and it's got nothing to do with that super super secret group that got banned from Iraq.
Nothing whatever.
Okay. Don't kill me. Okay. All right. All right.
Also, as we do on every show, we like to leave you with a little quote.
And there's a comedian that I love that Nikki hates, Ron White. But he's very funny.
I hate him. I can't think of
who he is. He's the one, the big Texan that's always got the cigar.
Oh, yeah, I don't like him.
Yeah,
I don't like
him at all. And he said, it's a vodka quote, "I believe that if life gives you lemons, you should make lemonade and try to find somebody whose life has given them vodka and have a..."